Hello. You are listening to the Beyond the Jargon podcast on CFUV 101.9 FM. Before we begin, I'd like to acknowledge with respect the Lekwungen-speaking peoples on whose traditional territory the university and CFUV stands, and the Songhees, Esquimalt, and Osanish peoples whose historical relationships with the land continue to this day. I'm a guest on this land, and I'm extremely grateful for the experiences and the life it has given me while I've been here. Welcome to the show. My name is Sam Kaiser. I use he, him pronouns, and I'm a master's student studying music technology in the final semester of my studies. My research is mainly focused on the implications of the growing popularity of immersive audio formats on popular music. This is the fourth and final episode of the 10th season, and I'm super excited to get back into it. For any new listeners, here's a quick little rundown of what we do on the show. Beyond the Jargon exists to give a platform to graduate students at UVic so they can discuss their research in an accessible and non-formal way. I've interviewed graduate students from various faculties at different points in their academic careers, asking them about their research topics, their experiences as grad students, and what their future plans may be. Today's guest is Sophia Mastrangelo.
My name is Sophia Mastrangelo. I'm a first-year master's student here at UVic. I'm doing my degree in kinesiology through EFI.
And EFI is...
Exercise, physical health, and education. Pretty sure that's what it says.
So that's the entire department?
That's the entire department,
cool.
Yeah.
Okay, so what else is included under that banner? Kinesiology?
It's kinesiology, like health education. A lot of people do biomech, physiology, just kind of things that are covered under kinesiology, kind of encompasses all of that.
Cool. So kinesiology is kind of like the larger banner underneath.
It's an umbrella term that yeah. Like will cover all of those things as they relate to human movement and activity. So anything sport or exercise related, linking back to those topics. So yeah.
And what brought you to UVic or to Victoria?
UVic specifically was just, it was mostly a location thing for me. I'm from Toronto, so I wanted to kind of experience the West Coast a little bit. And I needed a bit of space for me to develop as an individual. And I was like, heard all these great things about Vancouver Island. So I was like, okay, I'm going to come check it out. And also, like, UVic kind of ticked my boxes for being, like, a smaller campus where I could get more, like, one-on-one attention. And also, like, research here is supposed to be good. And as far as I've experienced, it is. So that was kind of my main driver. Also, just, like, looking at my supervisors' kind of areas of interest and my own from my undergrad, it kind of linked up quite well. So, yeah.
Yeah, I'm glad to hear it. So you were coming from Toronto. Were you studying in Toronto as well?
Yeah, so I did my undergrad at the University of Toronto. It's just like a four-year, it's technically a Bachelor of Science, but it's called a BCIN, but okay. They just wanted a little special name for it.
Sure. I think at Queen's, we also had a kinesiology degree that was a BCIN as well, I think.
But it like qualifies as the same thing.
Sounds good. Yeah, just like another cute little name
for
a science degree. So you kind of mentioned that your supervisor's goals and the research that you've heard at UVic is really good. Was there anything else about the program specifically at UVic that really appealed to you?
I was mostly looking through like a research lens, if I'm being perfectly honest with you. Like masters, especially thesis-based masters, as you know, are more like focused
for sure.
On research. Like I wasn't drawn to anything in specific, if I'm being perfectly honest with you. It was mostly location, research potential, and
you mentioned your supervisor's areas of interest. What are those areas of interest that appeal to you?
So initially it was kind of in like neurophysiology. I liked kind of the stroke rehab area. Mm-hmm. And I initially came to him looking at that, and then we kind of switch directions and went into more like pain science, which is still based in neurophys. So that's kind of where I'm like linking my interest into the study that we're currently like exploring. But that was kind of my initial driver for coming here, was like being able to work with him and from like a rehab focused area.
For this rehab focus, did you find that you started to become interested in this in your undergrad, or where did that interest come from?
So my undergrad was pretty like sparsed out. I didn't know what I wanted to do for like the first couple years, and I think that's pretty normal for a lot of people. When I hit like, I did an extra year in my undergrad because I was like so unsure. Mm-hmm. And I took a couple courses on like motor control, neurophys, like neuroplasticity stuff, and the changes in pathways and like modulatory mechanisms that our bodies use to like regulate how we feel and how we act is something that really resonated with me and I wanted to kind of like move forward in.
Mm-hmm.
And then also just connecting that back to Fizz, because that's something that I've obviously like spent a lot of time doing. So yeah.
For sure. So Fizz just meaning like physical activities?
Physiology.
Physiology. Okay, physiology. Great. So physiology is study of the human body?
Yeah. Physiology okay. is the study of the human body.
Perfect. And kinesiology is a study of
human movement.
Human movement.
And everything
okay.
that falls into kind of that area.
Sure. Okay. I don't think I ever really made that distinction in my head. Obviously, I've heard the terms like physiology and kinesiology before, but I never really thought about what those terms really meant separate to each other and how they connect, obviously.
Yeah.
And then so you're talking about these pathways too, like that's part of the nervous system, that's part of like the whole body system or...
So, yeah, I mean, physiology is like encompassing the whole body and all the systems in it. It's like sure. talking about all of your different systems. Neurological pathways are obviously part of the nervous system. And mm-hmm. I don't think it's a great idea for me to go into nervous system function because I'm sure I'll say something incorrect.
But sure, yeah,
no
worries.
It's all very, very complex. Sure. And there's a lot of different factors that play into how someone's circuitry works and things that can cause disruptions or dysfunctions and how that can link back to like pathology and presentation of symptoms that I find really interesting. And that's kind of where my interest lies in like looking at how our symptoms or like interpretation of stimuli can be modulated.
Mm-hmm.
And that kind of links back into like the pain study that we're going to be doing.
Mm-hmm.
So
I'm trying my best to like understand this as we're going as well, but
if you need me to explain.
Yeah, of course. No, we'll get back into that I think yeah. later, but what I'm curious about first is let me dial it back a little bit.
Sure.
Thinking more about transitioning from your undergrad to your graduate degree.
Yeah.
How was the application procedure for your program here? Was there anything interesting about it or difficult about it?
I would say nothing that like really caught me off guard. It was a pretty typical application process, I think, for me. I reached out to a whole bunch of places. As I said, I was trying to like cast my net pretty wide.
Mm-hmm.
I was kind of trying to figure out where I wanted to go. I applied to like places in the States, in the UK, and like in Canada here. And for UVic, I think it was just like a basic application with like a personal statement and some references, which is pretty straightforward. So none of that really caught me off guard. I think it was, as I said, like mostly just a location thing that ended up driving me this way. So,
for sure.
Yeah.
And you mentioned you had an idea of your supervisor's interests. Was that during your application process?
Okay, yeah. So during the application process, obviously for master's degrees that are supervised, you have to find your mm-hmm. PI before you apply and be yeah. like, okay. So I had to reach out to them prior to submitting my application and just be like, hi, I'm interested in the area that you do research in. Like, would you be interested in having a master's student or supervising me? And then they have to get back to you and tell you that that's okay, having that verbal exchange or email exchange, whatever it is. And then ideally you'd meet with them and get like an official permission to use them as your tentative supervisor for your application. Mm-hmm. I think that was like the most different thing, but I think that's pretty standard for PhD and master's like degrees anyways. So that was like the main difference for me.
It is different. Yeah. Just comparing it to like an undergraduate application. I did the same thing.
Yeah.
I had to find my supervisor, reach out to him and first ask, would you be willing to take on a master's student?
Yeah.
And then also like just making sure that the interests are aligned enough at least so that you're both getting something out of it, right? Like you're both getting some.
Yeah, exactly.
As you're getting the work, like you're getting the research, but then your supervisor is also gaining a student who is, they can show off on their CV as well and can also help with some of their projects as well.
Yeah, exactly. So mm-hmm. there has to be a mutual understanding for sure. And that was definitely like a different thing
for
with
sure.
just master's applications in general.
So, totally. Yeah, it is different, but it is nice because this is also someone you're working with for like 2 years at least, right?
Yeah.
So it's good to also establish if you feel like you can work with this person for a couple of years.
Yeah.
So you've kind of talked about this a little bit too, like how different your undergraduate degree was to your graduate degree so far, especially because it's a thesis-based program that you're in right now.
Yeah.
And you're saying that your undergrad was quite a bit more sparse. Is that the biggest difference that you think? Like it's a lot more focused now or what would you say?
It's much more focused. Mm-hmm. I took a lot of courses in my undergrad because, again, didn't know what I wanted. So I spread myself quite thin, I think, and wanted to like try everything, do everything. And I think that was, I don't know so much if it was a mistake or if it was just like, I don't know, something my younger brain wanted to complete at that point, but I think definitely the major difference now is just how specific like my area of interest is compared to what it was before. Mm-hmm. And I think that just obviously course load and like just the work is different. I'm doing much more writing than I've ever done before, which is nice because it's definitely like improving my writing. And I think that that's a good thing moving forward for me. There's much more exams in undergrad. Mm-hmm. I've taken like 2 exams in my grad degree, which was a surprise. I didn't think I'd have to take any. So
Yeah.
Those have different. Been like the major differences is kind of like the format of the courses and just the work that I actually have to do. Mm-hmm. Obviously there's a lot more like communicating between me and like other moving parts now than there were as like an undergrad student. Yeah.
I think
those are like the main differences.
Yeah, it is really different. There's also a lot of like when you're not stretched thin, I suppose, you're able to spend a lot more time thinking about your own individual work too.
Oh, right? Yeah, absolutely. I think the quality of work is also increased as far as like being able to apply most of your attention to something versus having to kind of try to give as much as you can when you have nothing left.
You mentioned this, I think, one of the first times we met. We played on a soccer team together. Mm-hmm. And you said that the program at UVic is quite small.
It's very small.
How large is it? Or how small is it?
Oh, I don't know the actual number, but like U of T is like hundreds of thousands of students.
Sure.
Here in the grad program, I think maybe there's like 30 to 50 of us.
Okay. Yeah.
Maybe even like PhD and master students combined in EV.
Sure.
I'm not sure about the undergrad program, but It's so much smaller. Like, it's so much smaller. My undergrad year had about 350 students in it.
Yeah.
In Kin, and that's a very small program.
For sure.
For U of T.
For sure.
So coming here and having, like, the smaller class sizes, it's very different, but I don't think it's a bad thing. Mm-hmm. It, like, I'm not really the person to, like, go up to the prof and talk to them, but everyone, like, all the profs I've had know my name, which is weird. Like, that's a new experience for me that I've never had before, and I think it's kind of helping me to open up to asking questions more because I'm very like
for sure
do it myself, but sure. I definitely need to reach out and like ask for help more, so I think that's helping me do that.
Totally. Yeah, like in a seminar format you're kind of forced to talk a lot more.
Exactly.
Right? Like it's not even really just asking questions to the professor, it's like they're asking you questions, they're having you involved in the discussion.
Yeah.
I can imagine is a pretty big change. I sort of noticed a change from my first and second year to my third and fourth year, where I had more seminar courses in my third and fourth year. Mm-hmm. And then now very like much smaller courses. But yeah, I can't really imagine going from, because I'm sure like you probably took some biology classes or larger kin classes where almost everybody in your year was in it at the same time.
Yeah, I originally took a whole bunch of like pre-medi classes because I wanted to do veterinary school. I got a lot of exposure in vet med, decided I didn't want to be a vet because they live hard lives.
Yeah, for sure.
It's totally difficult. So anyways, I took all those classes for that purpose mostly. So I did get a lot of exposure to massive like 800, 900 student classes where you literally are just a number and nothing else. It was awful. Like it's really hard to feel like you're supported in that environment. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't happen so much here. So that's a nice thing, I think.
I don't think it's possible to even think about doing a master's program with that many people because everybody has their research topic that is usually, like you said, related to the supervisor's topic, and that supervisor needs to be helping out all the time too.
Yeah.
Like they need to be a lot more engaged. It's interesting too, I guess, your supervisor is really engaged in your work, but from my experience too, they also give you a lot of room to work independently.
Yeah.
Because they're busy people too, obviously. It's also just a big learning moment to kind of have someone so invested in the work that you're doing, but also like you're still having to reach your own individual goals independently, right?
Yeah.
It's pretty interesting.
It is.
And yeah, big, big change from an undergraduate sort of format.
Oh, yeah.
I'm curious about your small program. So in your year, how many kin students are there?
Here?
Yeah.
God. I literally have no idea.
But of the 30, that's everybody combined, right?
Yeah.
So maybe like 10?
Maybe 10, maybe. I was talking masters and PhD students together.
Yeah, for sure.
And I don't know who's in what year. Sure. So probably roughly 8 to 10.
Yeah, 8 to 10. Wow.
Like, it's very small.
Very small, yeah. And do you take many classes with these other people in your first year?
There's a couple required kind of elective or just required. Like, obviously, research methods you have to take. You just quantitative or qualitative specific class. I took quantitative, but then there's also seminar courses.
Sure.
I was unable to take the seminar course last semester, but obviously I'll have to take it next year. Mm-hmm. But in those classes, it's been 15-ish people.
Okay, That's
a spread.
Sure.
But there's also people that I know are doing master's degrees that I haven't seen in a single class. So they could be in their second year and I would have no idea. So,
yeah, true.
Yeah.
Yeah, they could be even in their third or fourth year just finishing up too. Who knows? That's what's interesting too about grad school. I always meet new people. Doing a master's degree?
You're you've been here the whole time. Yeah. Yeah, so I would estimate 10 to 10-ish people.
Cool. Have you been exposed to their research at all?
A little. Mm-hmm. I'm TAing for a physiology lab. Cool. So I know a couple of the other grad students that are doing more kind of physiology based work.
Sure.
I know a couple that are doing some psychological behavior studies from one of the classes I'm taking now. I know a couple of the PIs, but it's pretty general still.
Yeah, you're also in your first year too, right?
Yeah.
So I'm not sure how your structure, the structure of your degree is, but have you spent much time with your individual research as of yet, or it's still sort of in its planning and burgeoning phase?
It's in its ethics phase.
Yeah, ethics phase. That's a huge phase.
Yeah, so we're working on getting ethics completed and submitted hopefully in the next 2-ish weeks.
Okay, amazing.
Yeah, and then we have to wait.
Yeah, you have to wait. It's such a long process. Yeah. I did the same thing. I did some listening tests, which shouldn't really be ethical questions with them, but because we're testing people, we have to get an ethics proposal done.
Yeah.
And I'm sure that it's a lot more of an involved process when it comes to kinesiology and physiology and things like that.
Yeah, well, pain research, right?
Pain research, I'm sure. Yeah,
yeah.
For sure. Yeah, do you want to talk maybe a little bit about the ethics process, how it's been so far for you?
Because
it's sort of an individual experience to people who are doing this kind of research.
Yeah, so my ethics experience so far has been, it's been pretty smooth. Mm-hmm. We kind of used a old rough, this whole project that we're doing was kind of a brainchild of my PI from years ago.
Okay.
So we kind of brought it back and reformatted it with some updated literature. We filled the background out and we went over what we would do in terms of procedure. And we've kind of just been passing that document back and forth, editing, revising to get it to a completed stage. I think it's almost there now.
Cool.
But it's just been a back and forth toss between them and I.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been not too bad.
That's good.
It's a lot of writing, but
For sure. It's
I think it's been good to kind of familiarize myself with the process itself. There's also some supplemental documentation we have to provide because of the complexity of the study, but yeah, it's been pretty good, I would say.
I know it's a pretty tedious process with a lot of writing. There's just many sections that you have to keep filling out.
So
right?
Many sections, yeah.
Totally. Yeah, there's a lot of things that you don't consider that you would have to kind of enter for an ethics proposal, but yeah, they're very, very thorough.
Yeah.
Which is obviously a good thing to protect both yourself as a researcher, but also the people that you're...
Yeah, you have to cover all your bases,
yeah,
for sure.
Yeah, engaging with the research, yeah. Totally. We can talk about your research a little bit. I know it's still in its planning phase and there are still things that you can't talk about, but that's totally fine. Could you just broadly talk about what your PI was originally investigating and how it kind of you're bringing it to now?
Definitely. We're kind of looking at how pain responses can be modulated and contextually influenced by different prompts, basically.
Okay.
And we want to see if we are able to change how someone is perceiving pain,
mm-hmm,
based on kind of different different contextual circumstances, if that makes sense.
Interesting. Yeah, I understand, but I think because there are some specifics that you can't talk about, those are the specifics that I'm interested in.
I know.
Yeah, which is super fair.
I'm trying to be like really vague.
Totally fair. And I won't push you on it, but I will ask one thing.
Yeah.
I'm curious about when you talk about the experience of pain. Obviously, pain is it's all in your brain, right? It's your brain reacting to different parts of your body that are injured or under attack or something like that. In this research, are you focusing on a specific kind of pain, or are there many different types of pain that you're looking at?
We're going to focus on, I think, tactile pain. So it's like a stimulus where you'd have like an indent. It's not going to be burning or cold or anything. It's like purely
physical. Like it's...
Yeah, like purely it's... Tactile is the right word.
Yeah, like pushing.
Pushing, yeah.
Pushing instead of pinching
type things versus like using... Some people will use like something that were to elicit like a spice response. Mm-hmm. So like hot pepper, that is considered a type of pain. If you were to apply like something that would cause like a burning sensation on you.
Okay.
That's technically a different type of pain. So is like menthol. So those trigger different nociceptors in the skin.
Interesting.
Than what a tactile stimulus would, if that makes sense.
Yeah,
it does. That's what we're looking at.
So just tactile, nothing else.
Yeah, focusing on tactile.
Cool. And is also, feel free to stop me if we're ever going into territory that we can't talk about, but this tactile pain, are you focusing on a certain part of the body or different parts of the body?
Palms.
Okay.
And bottoms of feet.
So, is it because those are very sensitive?
Yeah. So those have the most number of sensory receptors.
Interesting.
In the whole body. That's why we're so easily able to discern between two things.
Last question about this research.
Yeah.
When you say prompts, does that mean like different types of pressure or like different
conditions?
Okay. Yeah. So that could, like that could mean many things, I suppose.
Sorry,
That's totally fine.
That's okay.
No, I can imagine these prompts are a big part of what you're studying. Like you're changing the prompt. So then you see what the result is.
Exactly.
So, and you probably don't want...
It's a manipulation that we're doing. And we just want to like see how that changes the outcome. That's the structure. And I think that's pretty basic in research. And I'm not any weird territory by saying that.
No, for sure. Yeah. And I definitely don't want to get you in trouble or anything. But I was just curious about just kind of what those broad things
meant. I don't think I would get in trouble. I just like, I don't know.
Yeah, totally fine.
Yeah.
Super, super fine. I'm sorry. I said that was my last question. But I guess... What I'm curious about is, what are the applications for this research in the future, do you think? Or what kind of research groups or categories are you intending to kind of submit to and, I guess, contribute to?
Pain science, kind of journal areas. I think rehab, it's going to ideally have like educational implications for allowing people to have kind of more real-world application for understanding pain perception or their own pain perception.
Sure.
That's kind of like the main goal, is to make it more of like an ecologically valid way to examine how people can experience pain. And I think that that will be important for like rehabilitation techniques and for just people being able to kind of take autonomy over their own healthcare.
That's what I was curious about. Just like, what are the real world applications for this kind of research? And I think you answered that well, just like understanding pain and how we experience pain a little bit more.
Exactly.
Yeah. Amazing. Yeah. What do you think is a common misconception about your field or your research?
Common misconception. I think that people tend to overgeneralize the pain experience, and that there aren't like so many multitudes of factors that affect someone's perception of pain. Mm-hmm. It's not really straightforward at all. And there's a lot of different things that can cause someone to feel more, feel less, that go beyond like physical factors, like mental state, genetic predisposition, like things that existed or exist kind of outside of the field of physiology.
So yeah, I guess that there's generalizations about pain.
Yeah.
Sure.
So people tend to generalize the pain experience, and that I think has an impact on how people interpret their own pain.
Mm-hmm.
So definitely being able to like look at all the different factors and understand that they all play a role, mm-hmm. and like not just thinking that there has to be like damage to have pain. Like people need to understand that's not necessarily what's happening.
Yeah, that's a totally interesting statement about that. Doesn't have to be damage to be pain, because I think we do automatically assume that like in order for something to hurt, something has to break, right? Like yeah. your skin has to break, your yeah. bone has to break. But in many cases, that's not what happens.
It's not completely true in the research, but a lot of the general pop has that kind of idea in mind when they're having like a painful sensation.
Sure.
And there is like study that shows that it's not, they don't equate to each other, like pain mm-hmm. and damage, but it's not something that's been kind of shown in a way that a lot of people will take into actual like understanding when considering their own experience.
So. Interesting. Yeah. And I think maybe there's like a social aspect of that too. Like
100%.
Like, oh, like I'm tough. Like it doesn't hurt because nothing's yeah. broken. Like
yeah.
I'm totally fine. But yeah, super, super interesting.
Yeah.
I know you just started. This is your first year. I guess it's finished. The first year is finishing up. Second semester is finishing up.
Yeah.
So congratulations. That's
Thank
awesome.
You.
You're almost halfway through.
I know.
Crazy. What do you think will be next for you after this? It's well, okay if you don't know.
I'm not 100% sure, to mm-hmm. be perfectly honest with you. Like, I'm trying to see how me and research kind of resonate with one another.
Sure.
If I'm being completely honest. I am interested in, like, clinical work. Mm-hmm. So whether that's kind of going and being, like, just doing a PhD, doing, like, more research or clinical research. I'm also interested in, like, medical school, but you know, everyone's interested in medical school, so sure. we'll see. And yeah, so just things I'm considering right now.
For sure. Yeah.
Not 100% sure in either direction.
Totally. I mean, a year ago for me, I had no idea. And I still don't really know exactly what I'm doing. I'm applying to jobs and things, but I had a totally different idea of what I wanted to do about a year ago.
Yeah.
I think my second year was really where I kind of found what I really enjoyed sure. In this field.
Sweet.
And I was gonna ask you this right at the start and I totally forgot. We're in a radio station right now, mm-hmm. so we can talk about music. What are you listening to right now? Like, what are you really, really enjoying listening to right now?
Like, what genre of music?
Genre or artist or even just a song?
I have to pull my phone out.
Yeah, sounds good.
I don't know. I was, like, feeling like Rare Americans for a while. Like,
okay.
old, like, kind of grungy. Panic at the Disco.
Nice. Classic.
There's some weird ones on here, though. Like, Le Grand. Do you know what that is?
No.
Okay. Them.
Who's Le Grand?
I don't know. It's just some artists.
Okay, cool.
I literally, like, it's so random.
Sure.
It's hip-hop rap. That's what it says on Apple Music.
Oh, hip-hop rap. Cool.
But I wouldn't qualify it as that.
Fair enough.
Like, also this, like, weird Beyonce. What is
the new
this?
Song.
What is this song?
The country song. It's the number one country song in the world.
Strange.
It's good.
I've already made myself tired of it. But
fair enough.
Those are kind of my...
Current.
I have some weird choices in music that sometimes I just like listening to movie soundtracks.
Yeah, for sure.
I'm being perfectly honest with you.
Sure.
How to Train Your Dragon has like a super fire.
Really?
Yeah.
I should listen to that.
They have a super fire. It's all like orchestral.
Mm-hmm.
So good.
Cool.
Like awesome.
Awesome.
Anyways.
Sweet. Well, thanks so much, Sophia, for being on the podcast.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you for having me.
Thanks again to Sophia. This was a super interesting final episode of the season, and I feel like I've learned a lot about how we can classify pain and the depth of what pain really is and how it can be reactive to different prompts and situations. Like I mentioned at the start of this episode, this is the last episode for the 10th season of Beyond the Jargon. I've had a great time being the host this year, and I've learned a lot from my fellow graduate students from a wide range of departments and research focuses. If you're interested in more Beyond the Jargon episodes or any other podcasts from us, you can check out cfuv.uvic.ca for our podcast archive. Thanks again for tuning in. This has been Beyond the Jargon on CFUV 101.9 FM. For the final time this season, my name is Sam Kaiser, and thank you very much for listening.